I'm sorry if anyone took offense to what I said. We've often heard such statements from political figures and marveled at the nature of the public apology, or in that case, the non-apology. But it's not just the public figures who have a hard time humbling themselves to admit they've harmed people. Just plain folks often have trouble saying, I'm sorry. And you can probably find a few examples in your own life. Dr. Harriet Lerner provides many more in her book, Why Won't You Apologize? Harriet Lerner has a PhD attached to her name and a lot of experience. She's a therapist in private practice in Lawrence, Kansas, but has spread her knowledge far and wide with many articles and a dozen books, including the best-selling The Dance of Anger. Dr. Lerner, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Our inability to apologize is common enough to become joke material. I mean, why are we so bad at it?
Well, first, let me say how important it is, because we're all imperfect human beings and we all screw up and we all unwittingly hurt others just as we're hurt by them. So the need to give and receive apologies is with us until our very last breath. And when done well, apologies are deeply healing. And when they're absent or they're done badly, they compromise or even end a relationship. And the reason that we're all so bad at them universally is that we're wired for defensiveness. It's extremely difficult for humans to accept responsibility for our part of a problem without a hint of evasion, excuse-making, blaming, and so forth.
You admit to your own shortcomings as an apologist in your marriage, and it sounds like you do a little math sometimes.
Right. I mentioned that, you know, I always say that if you were a fly on the wall during my worst fights with Steve or my kids, you know, no one would read my books or come to see me in therapy. But yeah, I mean, sometimes Steve and I will get into a fight and I will be very happy to apologize for my part of the problem as I calculate it, say 47%, never more than that. And I expect Steve to calculate, I expect him to apologize for his part of the problem also exactly as I calculate it.
Usually 53%.
And we don't always
right?
do the same math. Mm-hmm. And that is actually, you know, a very common downward spiraling apology dance where we're each waiting for the other person to apologize first because we think either they started it or they're more to blame. And, of course, waiting for the other person to change first or do the right thing first is a perfect recipe for relationship failure.
All right, so we should not be sitting there waiting, looking at the other person, blinking, smiling, thinking, don't you have something to say? That is not a good practice, you're saying?
Right, and, you know, and saying, you know, I'm not apologizing for my part when you started it, and, you know, you're not apologizing for your part. And, I mean, that's a very common family dance.
There's a good scale in here of working our way up to in the degree of difficulty in apologies, and it starts with the easy I'm sorrys. What would some of those be?
Well, an easy I'm sorry would be if you, for example, spilled red wine on your friend's white carpet. I mean, that's very easy. All of us, even the most offensive person, is automatically going to say I'm so sorry. And hopefully we'll also offer to pay the cleaning bill. But as we get into more serious injuries and hurts, because not all of our unfortunate behavior is simple, then the apology becomes much more challenging.
Well, and in fact, you give a medium-weight apology in here, and this is the I missed my sister's wedding example, and it sounds like both parties really got dug in that situation.
I think that we are wired to get dug in. We're very easily fight or flighted, and we very reflexively move into blame. And when people are in a blaming position, they get over-focused on what the other person is doing wrong or not doing right and under-focused on their own behavior and their own creative options to lower the intensity, to offer an apology, not as the end of the conversation, but to clear the path for a later conversation that's going to be calmer. So, you know, the example that you're talking about is a medium level, but there are lots of big levels.
Well, and then so it sounds like a lot of these apologies are almost like a fine wine served aged and not necessarily improved for the age. But it sounds like the really big tough apologies are ones that come after years of situations cropping up.
Or it can be a current one as well. The most difficult apologies, the ones that are most difficult for us to offer, is when we're being confronted by a very angry person who feels very injured by us. And like you're saying, you know, it's very deep if it's way in the past, like your adult daughter is confronting you about how you ignored her at the time of a divorce that might have occurred 20 years ago, or it might be something current. But what's so difficult about it is that when we're being blasted by someone, it's very difficult to sit on the hot seat and put aside our defensiveness and really listen with an open heart to what the other person needs us to hear.
All right, we'll get more into the specifics of how to approach our own behavior when we're either apologizing or being apologized to as we get further into Harriet Lerner's book, Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. Examples abound in our own lives. I'm sure you want to share some of those. We'll take your phone calls and emails when we come back from this break on the Jefferson Exchange. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're exploring the phrase, I'm sorry, and why it's just so hard to say for us. And we'll get into whether that's a human thing or a cultural thing. But Harriet Lerner explores it in great depth. She's a psychotherapist in private practice in Lawrence, Kansas, has written many books and articles, has spoken and consulted many times, many places. And her book is called Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 with your examples or questions. You can also send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Harriet, you say apologies, it seems to be from what you're saying in the book that apologies are certainly sort of interwoven with forgiveness. And you write, resist pressure from the forgiveness cops. What does that mean?
Well, there's a predominant myth in this culture that even if the person who hurt you is totally unrepentant and they have never owned up, they can't orient toward reality, they don't care about your feelings, there's no remorse, there's pressure that you're supposed to forgive them. And that the myth is that there can be no peace or healing for you unless you forgive them. This is the only path that's not mired down in bitterness and hate. And that's not true. You know, for some people, that may be absolutely true. There's no one path to peace and healing. So there are many ways that people let go of that corrosive aspect of, you know, bitterness and anger that doesn't serve us without forgiving. And it's nobody else's place to tell you to forgive or not to forgive. And the other reason that actually my chapter in the book that's about forgiveness is called something like You Need to Forgive and Other Lies That Hurt You. Because one of the very hurtful things that we do if we believe that forgiveness is absolutely essential and always healing, like gratitude, which is indeed always a healing emotion. If we believe the cultural myths about forgiveness, then we start encouraging others to forgive. Like I hear parents say things like, look, what your dad did happened a really long time ago. You know, you need to move on. You need to not dwell on the past. You need to forgive him so that you can move forward. And this actually just hurts and re-traumatizes the person who needs a tremendous validation of their reality rather than, you know, your mother did the best she could. You just need to forgive her. Often people say this when they're tired of hearing the pain and anger of the hurt party. And yet the hurt party will just hold on tighter to their anger when the other person is telling them, you need to move on, your dad did the best he could, you need to forgive them. We do need to let go of the emotions that wake us up 2 a.m. You know, you wake up 2 a.m. obsessing about what your ex-spouse did to you. That only hurts you. You know, that person might be having a great day at the beach. But this does not mean that you have to forgive someone who has never earned your forgiveness.
Harriet Lerner, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Why Won't You Apologize? Chapter 2 is 5 ways to ruin an apology. Number 1, but. That's pretty obvious. Number 2, sorry you feel that way, putting it back on the person who's being apologized to. But what is the mystifying apology? Number 3.
The mystifying apology is one that's just, we hear this from politicians a lot. It's just very vague. It's sort of like, well, son, I'm sorry that you are angry at the things I say to you, or I'm sorry for what I said that may have made you feel that way. It's an apology that's really, it's a sorry that's not sorry at all, because there's no real accountability. There's no real apology in it, and it's confusing for the other person because they might first feel better because the person's saying, I'm sorry. And then later, they just feel a little bit off balance or not so great because there wasn't a clear expression like, I am sorry that I said X because that was wrong and that is something that I won't do again. So it's just vague and obfuscating and slippery and can be hard to decode.
And among the other 5 ways to ruin an apology, number 4 is forgive me already, which is, you know, sounds a bit berating. And then you get to number 5, the intrusive apology. What is that?
Well, it's not a good idea to apologize to someone for something in the past or the present who really doesn't want to hear from you. And, for example, a very common example would be where the woman in a couple relationship who's breaking up with someone or has just broken up and says, I really need not to hear from you. I really need space. And the guy, for example, is so anxious and so desperate that he can't stop texting apologies, flowers, slipping notes under the door. So if someone really doesn't want to hear from you, it's not a gift to apologize. The apology is not for you. It's for the other person. The apology, the heartfelt, good apology, is to help the hurt party to feel safe and soothed in the relationship again. And it's not for you to be able to calm yourself down with it when the other person has been very clear that they don't want to hear from you.
Well, I think this answers the question about whether apologies should ever be given out of a sense of obligation. I mean, if you're saying it needs to be heartfelt and you're just doing it because you think you should, it doesn't sound like the best circumstance.
Right. Now, sometimes we can apologize even though we're not clear. We're not quite clear, you know, whether we're sincere or we really should give the apology. But we give it because it may calm the emotional atmosphere of the relationship and lower the intensity. And what it's important to understand about the apology isn't the end of the conversation. The apology can calm things down and clear the space for a productive future conversation. So there are times when things are so intense that someone might just want to apologize to get that intensity down. But relationships need to be, intimate relationships need to be authentic, so you can then raise the issue later. You can say, you know, I gave an apology. Things were getting so intense. Let's talk about it again so we can clarify what each of us thinks and feels and what our differences might be.
So we go from the end of the spectrum where people have a hard time apologizing, which sounds like it's a lot of people, to you mentioned there are some people who apologize constantly. You have a friend who does this. What brings that behavior on?
You know, it's interesting. The greatest risk of being an under-apologizer is being raised male. And the greatest risk of being an over-apologizer is being raised female. And I'm talking about, you know, that sort of endless stream of useless I'm sorry's. Like, oh, you were going to sit here? I'm so sorry. Oh, you were looking at the menu? Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm so sorry. And, you know, women really have been raised to be apologetic for taking up valuable oxygen in the room. And there is a lot of female over-apologizing. And it is a good idea for over-apologizers to tone it down. If you've forgotten to return your friend's Tupperware, you don't have to apologize numerous times as if you ran over her kitten. Over-apologizing creates distance. It interrupts the normal flow of conversation. And it can be very irritating to your friends because they have to stop and reassure you, no, no, don't worry about it, it's okay, rather than continue with the conversation. But for all we might talk about women who over-apologize, both men and women equally have a very difficult time apologizing under fire, apologizing when someone is coming at us in a very intense, critical way, and it's a pretty anxious emotional issue, whatever it is, it's really hard to listen.
All right, let's get into that in just a second. I want to remind people we're talking to Dr. Harriet Lerner. She is a PhD, a therapist in private practice in Lawrence, Kansas, has written many books about relationships, including The Dance of Anger. Her latest book is Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. So you were talking about the just listening part, and there's an example that you alluded to earlier, mother and daughter, who had a bit of a confrontation right around Christmas time. And it's a rather long story, well told in the book, though, because it really takes some untangling. The daughter confronted the mother close to Christmas and just told her how mad she was about how the mother handled the divorce years earlier. Was that the gist of it?
That was the gist of it. And another part of the gist of it was that the daughter really attacked her mother. And, of course, the daughter didn't really have an understanding or empathy about what the mother was actually going through in the divorce. So, of course, the mother's natural instinct, I mean, any of our natural instinct is to defend ourselves and saying, you know, you have this wrong and you have that wrong and you don't understand all the pain I was going through. And that might be an important conversation later on. It can't be the first conversation. If the mother really has the maturity and the motivation to try to heal this, because no matter how exaggerated the daughter's accusations are, the challenge for the mother, and it was a long-term challenge, like you say, it's a longer chapter, is to really listen and try to get the essence of the daughter's anger and pain, and to not hijack the daughter's story with her own story and her own pain. And, you know, Jeff, listening is not a very sexy topic. People are not motivated to enhance their listening skills. They are very motivated to enhance their talking skills. And it's regrettable that and this is for all of our species, it's regrettable that, well, what a different world it would be if our wish to understand the other person were as great as our wish to be understood. And we're not wired that way. So the story that we're talking about, the mother over time proved herself to be a very courageous apologizer because she put aside her defensiveness and listened so carefully to and asked questions. She was a good questioner about the daughter's pain around the time of the divorce. And only in a later conversation did the mother say, you know, I need to tell you where I see that differently. Because it's also very important to define our differences, but not in a way that's going to cancel out the apology.
Yeah, that was really interesting, the listening skills that the mother used, because she took and took and took and took, and then later refined her own thoughts into what she thought she could deliver back effectively, which is that's a real trick for a lot of people, because it seems like when we're on the hot seat, and I think you confirmed this in the book, we're going to be defensive. We're going to fire back with, well, no, I did that because of this.
Exactly. We're going to be defensive. And here is what we do when we're defensive. And I want all of our listeners to really get this so we can all catch ourselves. When we're being criticized, we automatically listen for what we don't agree with. We automatically listen for the exaggerations, the inaccuracies that will inevitably be there. So we listen so that we can correct the facts. You know, we can interrupt and we can correct the facts. The true apology, the true healing in a relationship is when we can listen differently. We can listen only to try to wrap our brains around what we can agree with, even if it's 7%, the essence of what the person was saying. For example, you know, we're talking about the mother and daughter, and the daughter had a lot of inaccuracies and, you know, terrible blaming. But the essence of what she was saying, that she felt ignored and invisible at the time of the divorce, was very important for the mother to get. So pay attention. The next time someone says to you, we have to talk, pay attention to how you're listening for what you don't agree with. So you can say to yourself, this, Harriet Lerner said, this is defensive listening. I need to make a shift.
Well, and this explains perfectly, and now that I think about the examples in the book and you're reinforcing it here, that the times when you know, your spouse says, you know, I've had to clean up after you 8 times, and you're thinking, no, it's been no more than 3, maybe 4.
Exactly. Which, by the way, Jeff, what this means is that if you want an apology, you want and deserve an apology, don't over-talk it and stick to the facts. Because if you criticize your partner either for always coming home late without texting or for coming home late 7 times without texting, and this person has only come home 5 times without texting, they will only listen for the error. So exaggerating, if you're the hurt party, the injured party, and you want the apology, the more you over-talk it, we all over-talk things when we're angry, the more you over-talk it, the more you overload the circuits, the more you exaggerate the facts, what you're doing, you're really protecting the other person because they'll become defensive and, you know, they're gonna correct you and bring up your crime sheet.
How much do the apology patterns of our birth families stay with us, do you think, Harriet?
Well, sometimes, you know, if you've been raised in a family where your parents haven't been able to apologize to you and validate your reality and admit mistakes, it can be harder to apologize as an adult. But the more serious error that parents make, and listen to this if you want your kids to apologize, they make apologies into too big a deal. It's too shaming. It's too you know, that wasn't a sincere apology, Johnny. You do that again, and you stop looking at your feet, and you don't have empathy for your brother. And the kid just wants to stick their fingers in their ears and never apologize or hear about it again.
All right, much more to talk about with Harriet Lerner. Her book is Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. Maybe you have some examples you'd like to share with us or questions for the author. Join us on The Exchange when we come back from this break. We'll return in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're learning how to say I'm sorry appropriately with Harriet Lerner, a psychotherapist in private practice in Lawrence, Kansas, but well-known across the country as a relationship expert through many articles and books, including The Dance of Anger. Her latest book is called Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. It shows us how to do apologies wrong. We're all good at those. It shows us how to do apologies right, which we could probably use some practice on. Maybe you have some examples from your own life you'd like to share, either coming or going. We'd like to hear from you. 800-838-3760 to share by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Harriet, how much are apologies tied up with our own self-worth?
Very much, especially if the harm is a big one. Because to apologize for something serious, we were talking about neglecting a child, for example. To apologize for something serious, you need to have a solid, big platform of self-worth to stand on. And from that higher vantage point, you can look out at the bad thing that you did or said, and you can get it, you can own it, because you're able to see it as part of a much larger, more complex, ever-changing picture of who you are as a person. But some people, and especially the people who have done you really serious harm, those people stand on a small, rickety platform of self-worth, and they're unable to allow themselves to see the hurt they've caused, because to do so would threaten to flip them into an identity of worthlessness or just flip them into shame. And no one can tolerate that. We can apologize for what we do, but we can't apologize for who we are. You know, if we feel like admitting to something will make us a bad mother, a global label like that. So the non-apologizer, I'm talking about the really entrenched non-apologizer who will never apologize to you, no matter how well you open up the issue. The non-apologizer walks on a tightrope of defensiveness above a huge canyon of low self-esteem.
Well, and it results, I would think, in some stuckness. I mean, you can't get yourself to apologize because it'll make you feel worse, but by not apologizing, you also can't make yourself feel better, make the other person feel better, and therefore make you feel better.
Right. It can be something of a vicious circle. Mm-hmm. Right. So if people who feel too badly about themselves will not be able to apologize, and it's very important for our listeners to understand this, because very often people sort of parachute down on their families and they confront their mom or dad or sister or brother about a really, really painful bad thing that happened. And what I want people to know is that that family member's ability to own up, to really orient toward reality and get what you're saying, has nothing to do with whether or not they love you. What it has to do with is how much self-respect they have. And we can't bestow that on anyone else.
Let us take some calls. We have Connie and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Harriet Lerner.
Good morning. I hope I missed a couple of minutes of this, so I hope you haven't covered this, but I've encountered something a few times in work or in business relationships where, say, I didn't do procedure ABC and I did A to C, and it caused, you know, someone to do something, having to do something more. And I said, I'm sorry for doing that. And I was told, don't apologize. And I had this happen two or three times with one individual. Just, Connie, stop apologizing. And I said, but I caused you an inconvenience. I did whatever. And I don't have a problem saying I'm sorry for minor inconveniences or these sort of lower level, apologies, stepping in front of someone or something. But some people seem to have a hard time understanding that I do feel sorry that I caused them an inconvenience. So it was a very peculiar circumstance to have someone telling me to stop apologizing, and I'm not someone who does it, 24 hours a day.
Right, so you're not an over-apologizer.
Right, over-apologizer. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to know how to respond to it. It seems like almost sort of a person is saying, if you say you're sorry, you're not being empowered or something. So I'm not quite understanding the psychology behind the person saying, stop apologizing.
All right, thanks for that, Connie.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
It is very difficult to understand that, because if you're not over-apologizing, if you're simply saying in one sentence, I'm sorry, or I'm sorry, I that you have more work to take on now, it is difficult to imagine the psychology, of where that person is coming from, that they have a negative reaction. And in your shoes, if you're saying a simple, I'm sorry, and the other person doesn't like it, I would stop saying it to that particular person, because basically, for whatever reason of their own, they don't want to hear it. But I sure wouldn't stop saying it, because the world needs a lot more of what you're doing. And the fact that when you make a mistake, you can say you're sorry in the workplace is a responsible thing to do. So keep doing it, but I would cut it out with someone who clearly lets you know they do not want to be apologized to.
All right. Thanks for that, for sharing on that, Connie. There's a part of the book that absolutely floored me, and it's a lesson in remorse or the lack thereof. It's the story of the San Francisco minister who sexually abused all of his daughters. You interviewed him. And what did you learn about apologies from him, or the lack thereof?
Well, it really relates to what we were talking about before, Jeff, that people who do very shameful things, this is a minister who, in the worst way, sexually abused all of his daughters. And very interestingly, during my interview with him, he had one son, and I asked whether, there had been any sexual activity with his son, and he rose from his chair and he said to me, almost spitting my name, he said to me, Dr. Lerner, that would be a sin. And I'll never, forget.
Yeah, none of us who've ever heard this story will forget it either. Wow.
I'll never forget that moment. And the fear is that people who do very bad things are so shame-filled that they're not going to orient toward reality. This is a person who is never going to get it, who is wrapping himself in blankets of rationalization and minimization and denial and excuses, in fact, he, and perhaps he believed this, said that he didn't want his daughters introduced to sexuality by strangers. He wanted them introduced by someone who loved them. So, I think this is a very extreme example. None of us are going to identify with a person who would do such a thing. But what is human and more universal is that when something is just too bad for us to own, because it challenges our very image of who we are, we're going to be defensive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So people obviously can't be shamed into true apologies. So that raises the question whether apologies can only be self-prompted or whether there are circumstances in which it is appropriate to request an apology.
You know, I think it's appropriate for parents, for example, to request an apology from children, just as we request that they say thank you, even if they really didn't love the gift that Aunt Shirley gave them. When we're dealing with adults, adults don't like to be asked to apologize or having an apology demanded. It makes them feel like a child. It sort of can back people into a corner so they don't have the space to really think about their bad behavior. So you can shame people into an apology, you know. And parents, I mean, shame, by the way, is never a good thing. And I think I have an example in the book where a mother's talking to her little, very little kid who stole some candy from a store. And she started out okay. She said, you know, this is wrong. It's against the law. We're going to go back and we're going to apologize and return this. But then she turned into very shaming behavior, like, you know, I didn't see you as the sort of person. I thought you were an honest person. And, you know, now I don't know if I can trust you again. And the kid, you know, was hanging his head, and he said, I'm sorry, because he probably wanted to get out of that conversation really fast. Shaming people is never a good idea. They may apologize. Shame leads to conformity, especially if it's done by someone in authority. But it deeply hurts people. Shame deeply hurts people, even if the consequences don't show up till later.
There's some interesting tales in here about what happens on the other end to the person who's receiving the apology. And there's a really interesting story you tell about giving your kids some snacks at a, I think it was an airport rental car counter and shared with another child nearby, and then realized, whoops, this is not what you do in today's world.
Yeah, that was interesting because I decided to apologize to the mother because I had given, you know, I was sharing this bag of candy with my little boys, and I saw her little kid. And I almost didn't apologize to her because she didn't, there seemed to be no apparent reaction. And, it, you know, some time had passed. But for some reason, I decided to apologize. And I said, I'm sorry that I gave candy to your child without asking you. And I was sure that she was going to say, oh, don't worry about it. It's nothing. And instead, she looked me straight in the eye, and she really held the connection. And she said in a very present way, thank you for the apology. I really appreciate it. And it was because of the way she said it, no shaming, no blaming, no lecturing me on, you know, what could have been the consequences of my giving her child the candy, because she said it with such grace, just thank you for the apology. I really appreciate it. I've never forgotten that. And it wasn't until after she said it that I really started thinking about my behavior. It wasn't till after her accepting my apology so simply settled in that I started thinking, oh, my God, you know, my kid's filthy hands had been in that bag of candy and her child might have been diabetic and this and that. And one of the things I talk about in that example is sometimes it's hard for us. It takes courage to do what the woman in the airport did, to just say, thank you for the apology. I appreciate it. Or just thank you for the apology, because we get uncomfortable and we tend to say, oh, you know, don't worry about it. It was nothing. And it's not a good thing to do to cancel out like that the apology that another person has found the courage to make.
Well, and so that's a big one, I think, accepting the apology and not saying, well, just do it right next time. Or, you know, we've all been on the ends of apologies like that. So, I mean, it sounds like brevity probably works best on both ends of that transaction.
Brevity, by the way, works best in general. You know, everyone who gets me as a therapist or a consultant gets me as an editor. I always tell people to say it shorter. I always tell them, do not click send on that long, confrontive email you know, that you wrote at 3 a.m. to your sister because you want her to apologize. It never helps if you want to get your point across. It never helps to go on too long and to overload the circuits. And what happens when you do that, you know, you go on and on with your criticisms, is you're actually protecting the one who hurt you, because they will shut down and they will vacate the emotional premise and they won't really hear what you're saying.
So you can put them on the defensive even in print, right?
Exactly.
All right. So brevity and succinctness count on all forms of communication. The book is called Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. Harriet Lerner is the author of the book, and she's been our guest in the exchange today. Harriet, good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.